I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is fiction writer and translator Silvia Aguilar Seleny, and we're going to talk about her several books and actually her new position as a visiting writer here in the Department of Creative Writing at UTEP. We're very excited. She's going to be now part of the UTEP team. Actually, I say now part of the UTEP team, but actually she's been around before. She was a graduate student here. She got her MFA in creative writing right here with us in the department where she's going to be teaching, which is really kind of awesome if you think about it, to teach in the same department that you graduated from. And she's also taught classes here before, but now she's actually joining us as a full-time visiting writer, and we're all very excited for this new year. And I'm excited for the new year, not only because Silvia is joining our department, but also because this is our sixth season of Words on a Wire. And I say sixth season, I'm guessing. Somebody could probably go back in the archives and find out whether or not I'm right, because it could be actually seven seasons. I lose track of the years, just like I lose track of how old I am. I think once I turned 50, I lost count. But I feel 21, so maybe that's it. And we've been doing the show for many, many years. Benjamin Alida Sines and I started it years ago. And then Tim Z. Hernandez joined me as my co-host, and we're still going. So I'm very excited to be back. This is the very first show of the new season, and we have a fantastic writer, Silvia Aguilar Seleny. So stick around. And oh, I forgot to mention, this year I'm going to be the chair of the Department of Creative Writing. And I've never been chair before. I've always been a writer and a professor. I usually lock myself up in my room and I write all day, and sometimes I can go weeks at a time without even talking to people or going to meetings. But now as department chair, I have to shift my consciousness, use a different part of my brain, and be out there and actually show up to the office and have meetings with people and interact on a daily basis. It's going to be quite a challenge, but I'm up to it. And if you don't know what department chair does, well, join the team, because I don't either, and I'm hoping to learn on the job. I do know one thing. Whenever I tell people that I am going to be department chair, if those people have no connection to the university, like if it's my cousin or my aunt or somebody I meet, or just, you know, anybody not connected to the university, I say, oh yeah, I'm going to be the new department chair for creative writing. They always say the same thing. They say, oh my God, congratulations. But when I tell somebody who works at the university, when I tell other professors and others who have been creative writing chairs, oh, I'm going to be the new chair of the Department of Creative Writing, they always say the same thing. Oh, I'm sorry. So I don't know what I'm going to be facing this coming semester, but I imagine it'll be a challenge, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. And one of the reasons why I think it's going to be amazing is because we have a new professor, a new visiting writer with us, and that is my guest today, Silvia Aguilar Seleny. She is a fiction writer, a translator. She published 5 books of fiction in Mexico and a young adult series in the U.S. titled Coming Out. Her novel, which I am reading now and am just blown away by, is called Todo Eso Es Yo, and it won the Tamaulipas National Book Award in Mexico in 2015. According to her biography, she bikes, she knits, and she believes deeply in green tea. We have that in common, Silvia. I have green tea after every dinner. And oh, by the way, in the studio is Alaya. She is a 9-year-old scholar, and she is joining us today. Alaya, don't I have green tea after dinner every night?
Yeah, he does.
So Silvia believes in green tea. She is the newest visiting writer, visiting professor here in the Department of Creative Writing at the University of Texas in El Paso. She will be teaching fiction writing, translation, and even a bit of poetry thrown into the mix. Silvia, welcome not only to Words on a Wire, but to UTEP.
Yay! I'm so happy to be here. So excited.
Actually, it's probably not accurate to say welcome to UTEP because you've been to UTEP before.
Yeah, since 2010, I think now.
What did you come to UTEP for?
For the MFA. I came to do the MFA in 2010. And when I graduated, I started adjuncting for the program for teaching Intro to Creative Writing. And then I started teaching also reading and writing fiction, which I'm teaching this semester. And then along the way, I met someone and I stayed here. And I think this is my home now. I've been here 7 years.
Oh, you met your significant other here in El Paso?
At a campus.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, then what a significant campus this is,
right?
For you. And it will be for the rest of your
it
life.
Is.
Should you go on to other lands and you come back when you're 90 years old, you're going to say, this is where I met my significant other.
We'll always have UTEP, I'll say.
Yeah, I used to use that as a line when I was living in Fresno and I was on my first date. I would be passing by Fresno State, and if I met her there, I would say, 10 years from now, I'm going to be passing by here and saying, this is where I met you. Well, welcome. You got your MFA here. Can you tell us why you came from Mexico? Where in Mexico were you living, and why did you come here?
I'm from Hermosillo, Sonora, Mexico, which actually is very similar to El Paso.
It's really
a little bit hotter, but in so many ways.
Wait a minute. It's hotter than El Paso?
Way hotter.
Oh, my God.
115, 120.
Wow.
It's hotter. Jeez. So when people complain here, I'm like, you don't know. I've been in hell. So I came to do my MFA here. I think one of the reasons, had been El Paso here. I came for the Congress of Literatura Mexicana, the Spanish department, years ago. And I liked the city. And I liked that it was a little bit similar in terms like, it's a city, like the heart of the city is in the middle, and then you have the mountains around.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's
I remember that when I was checking the program, I was like, I remember the city was like this. And I think because I'm from the north of Mexico, which borders with Arizona, and we have such a back and forth communication and traveling, I think I've always had a strong relationship with English. I call it my stepmom language, which is. Mm-hmm. Sounds bad, but it's great.
No, I like that. Your stepmom language.
English.
That is wonderful. And so, also, I'm glad you gave language a female identity.
I know.
That's fantastic.
So I think when I saw that the program was bilingual, I thought it was like the best for me because I would be able to explore both writing in both languages. And I said it like that, but I never imagined how my writing was going to be affected by the city, the people, and the program. So I came for the program and I had a job. I worked at Tec de Monterrey. And my plan was to go back. I had a job back there. But as I was finishing my last year, I decided, well, I'm going to stay one more year. I'd give it a chance, have the OPT, optional practical training, and work for a year. And then, I don't know, I stayed. And I like it. I like it a lot.
You know, that's interesting because I've been in El Paso since the year 2000. And I'm from California. And so my first reaction when I came here from California was, where are the trees? Where's the green?
You know,
I was a little upset, but I fell in love almost instantly. I mean, I was here a week and I thought, this is home.
Yeah.
And I noticed that people who come to El Paso, we have a creative writing MFA, and we have students coming from all over the Americas and all over the country. And this year we have a student from Spain. We've had students from Cuba, we've had them from all over the place. And one of two things happens, and I don't know if this is normal for other cities, but they either completely fall in love with it, or they can't wait to get out.
I know. Well, it's a good place to write because we do have activities, but I think it's a very calmed town, tranquil, you know. So I think
it's a huge city, but it feels like a small town.
Exactly. And then the people, I mean, I think that's something that I should mention, that it was important for me to decide to stay and then bring my song along with the people. Like, everybody smiles at you. There is a sense, a very strong sense of community at El Paso that I haven't seen in many other cities, and I've been around.
Absolutely. You know, I'm from Fresno. Mm-hmm. And Fresno is a little smaller than El Paso, but it's got a serious gang problem, and there's a lot of violence, and there's a lot of just really, you know, horrible things that happen. There's some good things, of course, like my family. They're still there, and they're pretty good, I think. But, you know, the thing is, in Fresno, you learn how to conduct yourselves on the street, and so, you know, if you grew up in Fresno and you walk around Fresno and you negotiate the streets of Fresno, you have some sort of street smarts.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to El Paso for the first time. I was a new professor, and somebody took me to Music Under the Stars, and it was a Chicano band that night. Mm-hmm. And there were cholos everywhere. I mean, there were all these Chicanos and cholos and cholitas, and I'm thinking, oh, there's going to be a shooting.
No, everyone, well, I'm sure they were smiling and dancing, right?
I remember I was sitting down, and there were these cholos next to me, and they were calling me sir. You know, and when they found out I was a professor at UTEP, they were almost proud of me. You know, it's like this really beautiful sense of community. Yes. And you felt that warmth when you came here.
Exactly. Even when I found a place to leave, and the people learned, there were students from the program that were from El Paso. So there is something about when they asked me, what do you like about El Paso? I was like, I always say the people. I mean, I love the city, but I like the people. I think it has had a strong impact in my life in many ways.
That's beautiful. You know, it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite lines from Man of La Mancha, you know, that theatrical adaptation of the Don Quixote story, when they're asking Sancho Panza, you know, why do you hang out with this guy? You know, why do you hang out with? He's crazy. He's, you know, he's not in touch with reality. He's, you know, why are you hanging out with Don Quixote? And his answer is so beautiful. He says, I like him.
Yeah. Yes.
That's it.
It is like that. That's it. There's nothing more to say.
Tear out my fingernails one by one. I like him. Yeah, absolutely. That's how I feel about El Paso too. It's a special place. It really is.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to experience the special, because it's very easy to reject.
Yeah, it's very easy. And I'm a little bit of a hermit, but it is something that you need to experience. Yeah. You need to, because you have to go to, I mean, people can live in El Paso and never go to downtown, or people from downtown, maybe they never go to the east side or the west side. So it is interesting. It's a place to explore.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah, people on the west side very rarely go to the east side. People on the east side, well, probably more often go on the west side, but they don't have to. And people in El Paso can go virtually all their lives without going into Juarez, which is weird because they're twin cities.
Exactly. And yet it's funny how you see people from the east side or the west side in Segundo Barrio buying, you know, where you go to Bowie's to get donuts or get your meat or tortillas. So there's something.
And for those of you who are listening from outside of El Paso, El Paso is, I would guess, at least 80% Mexican. It is the most bilingual city I've ever been to. And I've been to, like you, a lot of places. Like, say you go to New York. New York isn't a bilingual city. It's a multilingual city. I mean, there speaks so many languages over there. El Paso speaks Spanish and English. And, of course, there's some Koreans here and Germans. And
Puerto Ricans.
but the languages are Spanish and English here. And what's interesting is no matter where you go in El Paso, whether it's the rich side of town or the poor side of town, you walk in and they're probably going to speak to you in Spanish.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's definitely a unique place. And you are a unique writer, Sylvia. I've been reading your novel, your award-winning novel, Todo Eso Es Yo, and I love it. I didn't get through the whole thing because I just got a copy 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. But I just love the fragmented pieces and the voice of this young woman who is a writer and wants to write and who cares about words. And if she doesn't know a word, she'll open up a dictionary and look up the word and consider the possible meanings of the word. Mm-hmm. And she just got such a really beautiful consciousness that usually when you read a novel, you are absorbed by the storyline, and there is a storyline here, but what really absorbs me is the language and the voice.
Thank you.
How did this come about, this novel?
We always say, like, I did this book, and we're happy or excited. But with this book, I feel very proud. One, because I think everything I learned through the MFA was there in terms of form, for example.
Right.
And then also the city, because this is a girl that lives in Juarez and comes and lives in oh, maybe it's a spoiler, but she comes and leaves. Eventually, she comes to live in El Paso. Mm-hmm. So it was a novel about hearing people. And I guess the idea of the novel was by crossing the bridge back and forth during 2011 and 12, which was an exercise I was doing. So I think I'm proud of the novel because I think it reflects what it is to be in El Paso, what it is to be Mexican, what it is to be in the twin cities, right? This El Paso Juarez situation and community.
You know, that's interesting. I say that it's somewhat of a fragmented novel because it doesn't necessarily have linear chapters. Although I suppose it is linear in a sense that, you know, we don't jump around in time. but it has these really kind of beautifully written fragments. But I don't want to give the impression that it's an artsy-fartsy novel that isn't compelling. Because what you do, and I think this is brilliant, your technique here, is you give us a little information that causes tension, but you don't reveal it. Like the very first time it mentions Father got a new job and that he's getting paid more money. And he's working for El Gringo, I think it is. And the mother doesn't like El Gringo. We don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. We don't know what kind of business he's in. But then later on, he has to go to Tijuana. And Tijuana is, they say, a caliente, you know. And she's curious, well, caliente, what does that mean? Because it's hot here. And she looks up caliente and she finds this word that it could mean like, you know, there's something going on there. And and so the plot deepens with every section. Exactly. I don't know if you would call them chapters, but you do have this developing narrative. And I'm thinking, did you know what was going to happen before you started writing this novel?
You know, it's funny because I knew where I was going to start. I knew where I wanted to end. I knew I wanted her to do what she did at the end. But at the same time, as I was writing, and then at some point I was like, well, I need to do more research. So I started reading newspapers and everything, because this happens during the Calderon years in Juarez, which is where the worst years in terms of violence in Juarez.
Right. That was around what time?
Exactly, 2006 to 11, 12.
Okay, that was when Juarez was called the most dangerous city in the world.
Exactly, exactly. So my first idea was like, I want to write about these years, but not the way normally someone would do. I want to see what would a child say? What would someone young see and imagine and everything? So at some point I had to stop and I had to do more research, checking newspapers, images, even Wikipedia information on the list of events that happened during those years in Juarez. So as I was going to research, I was like, whoa, so there's much more from what I expected. So even though it did land where I wanted, I think in the middle, it got into some issues and details and writing, her writing, that I didn't expect. I mean, I know it happens with every book.
Oh, yeah, you have to be surprised or the reader won't
exactly,
be surprised.
Yes, exactly, definitely. But I did know that I wanted this voice. That was something I knew from the beginning. I want this young voice of a girl who's writing a diary. I knew that.
Yeah, and it's really these nice moments of innocence juxtaposed with horrible incidents, like the scene where everyone's woken up in the house by gunshots, and she sees her father get a gun, and he's holding the gun like if anyone's coming in, you know, but it's so innocent the way she tells it, you know, and even seeing her father with the gun, there's an innocent quality to it because she's thinking, you know, daddy's gonna protect us. But the reader can see an overall issue developing, but the protagonist cannot.
Exactly.
And that's really kind
of beautiful. It's kind of flirting with these events, with these situations. So it was kind of like, I'm just gonna put this here and see what you reader can grasp from it. So I think that was the best idea I had of having this young voice. I think if I had chosen like omniscient or any other type of narrator, many things would have been missed. And I think it creates this sort of interesting relationship with the reader. I had the opportunity, I was invited to the book fair in Tijuana. I think it was in May. So they invited me to read at a middle school.
Oh, nice.
Which was weird. Normally, I when I've taken to this event, normally it's high school. But this was middle school. So I was like, let's see how it goes. Because, you know, middle schoolers, I think they're a little more dangerous than anything else in the world. And it was amazing, their reaction, because they were laughing. And then at some point, there are some scenes that are strong, they were so quiet. So normally when it comes to questions, kids are like, why did you write it? Or why do you write? Just very basic questions. These kids had a lot of questions.
Oh, that's nice.
And more than that, they had a lot of things to say or to add to the subject. Yeah. So that was very interesting to me.
You know, there's been a lot. I'm talking to Silvia Aguilar Seleni, author of 5 books, including this wonderful novel, Todo Eso Es Yo. There's a lot of novels and short stories written about Juarez during this time that you're writing about, during the dangerous period where there was multiple murders, where even cops weren't safe. I mean, cops were afraid. They were getting slaughtered, and there was just some horrible things going on. And I remember even here at the university, if you've never been to El Paso, you could look at UTEP, you can look out, for example, my office window and you see Juarez. That's what you see. It's, you know, Juarez is closer to my office door than the east side, you know, than El Paso, you know, many parts of El Paso. There's been so much written about it. There's been one of the most celebrated novels in the last couple of decades is 2666 by Bolaño, Roberto Bolaño. And there's been If I Die in Juarez. There's been all these books, both in English and Spanish, about Juarez. I'm wondering, was that a challenge to write about a place that had been written about so often before without falling into cliches?
Course, and then the challenge of deciding having a child talking about it. Mm. Like, who would take serious a child talking about violence in Juarez, right? So it was obviously a big challenge. Also, I think the idea, and that might be a little bit weird, but I think it's a subject that has been visited more by men writers, than women. So it was scary. It was scary to think, like, will this work? I mean, in my mind, looks beautiful. Will it finally, you know, work in these terms? And at the same time, how would someone who's actually from Juarez, I mean, I came to Louis 2010 and I did my research, but I'm not from Juarez. So am I talking about something that does not belong to me? That was a question that was there all the time. And I had a reading in Juarez during this, I forget, the Del Rio that we went, the Rio Bravo, remember that Congress?
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
And the reaction of the kids were like, oh, they were agreeing, they were understanding, was like, okay, so so it is okay. It is okay to sometimes take something that supposedly
doesn't
belong
to you. Oh, yeah, and the thing is, you know, human emotion and human experience belongs to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter if you said it in Juarez or you sent it in, you know, Winesburg, Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, you capture something that's a part of the human experience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in fact, I've heard people say, I don't think you should write about Juarez if you're not here. I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I think, you know, that a writer can write about anything. What my question really was about was all this other literature. How do you set yourself apart from, you know, from all that other stuff? Because most people who write about Juarez aren't from here anyway. Mm-hmm. Bolaño was from Chile.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I had that in mind, and obviously it was challenging because of that, but that didn't stop me.
No, it
shouldn't stop you,
because
it is part of experimenting. At the same time, I think my book is a dialogue with other books that have somehow talked about the subject. And it's funny, now that I think about it, I think I read more poetry than fiction when I was writing
the book. Oh, that makes sense. That's why the language is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what captures you right away. If you love language, if you love your mother or stepmother tongue, you know, because I read this, it's in Spanish, and I read primarily in English, but you know, Spanish is my stepmother tongue, and I was immediately enthralled. But also, you know, what I think was a really good technique, and I wanted to ask if this was intentional. Or actually, that's probably not a good way of saying it, because whenever you ask an author if it was intentional and you say it was brilliant, they're going to say, well, of course.
Of course. You know, I thought about it.
And so what did you have this on your conscience at the beginning of it? The fact that we really don't hear the word Juarez very often.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't hear the word El Paso very often. Mm-hmm. We hear Tijuana before we hear anything about Juarez. Mm-hmm. And so it could be pretty much anywhere. Was that a technique that you think might have immediately dispelled for the reader any kind of expectation or stereotype of the region?
You know what? I was afraid of using it or mentioning Juarez too much. I was afraid of mentioning the United States or El Paso or, you know, it was not about the city. It was about the people. So I think it was not like intentional in terms like I want to keep the mystery. It was all the opposite. I didn't want to.
It was organic, but it was organic because I think that helps the reader immediately go into the novel before they realize, oh, this is Juarez, as opposed to if you had mentioned Juarez immediately, we would think, okay, here's another novel about Juarez.
Exactly.
But it's not about Juarez. It's about her. It's about her family. It's about what happens to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about language. And it's about being a writer. She wants to be a writer. She's always writing, writing. It's a really beautiful novel. It's called Todo Eso Es Yo.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it is in Spanish, but I imagine this novel is so beautiful that that there is going to be an English translation.
Yeah, and it has been interesting because I at first thought, like, I'm going to translate it because it's hard to get someone to be interested in your work as much as getting the translation. So I decided, okay, I'm going to translate it. But then at some point I was making a mess. So I decided to write a book in English, which is different than translating.
Right.
So I knew what was happening in each one of the sections of the book and each one of the entries of the diary. So it was about writing it all over again and playing with language. Well, it was different.
I think somebody's going to pick up this book and they're going to say, this needs to be translated. It really should be translated. We're running out of time and have so many other things that I want to talk to you about. But let me just ask you briefly about the Coming Out series. These are books that are in English. Can you tell us just really briefly about that? Because I do want to talk a little bit about your first semester here at UTEP as a full-time.
So it was interesting because I got hired to write these six books. I got the publisher gave me the general plot. So it was a little bit like ghostwriting when they tell you, this is what you have to write. So they gave me a general plot and specific characters, but I developed everything else. And it was hard and heavy. It was so much fun to do it because I did it exactly right after I graduated. So I had it was a year.
How did the publisher decide to contact you, somebody who generally writes in Spanish?
No, actually, I should thank Lori, because Lori got an email, like, we're looking for writers. Lori sent me the email, and then I pretty much got the answer, started contacting with them. It was kind of like auditioning as a writer.
Lori, the former admin assistant for the Department of Creative Writing.
Yes,
wow, that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. We get these emails a lot, and not a lot, but occasionally, and I would have ignored it, but it turned out to be good for you.
Yeah, it was very good. It was
that's great.
Another a year of classes.
And you have a website and blog. It's Silvia Aguilar. .com.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. I really like your design. In fact, I was going to steal some of your design ideas. and also, you write for an online journal called Entropy.
Oh, I love it. Yes. I started last year. I write reviews here and there. I write some articles. And I think this is a place where I've allowed myself to do some nonfiction. And
you write these in English. These are in English.
It's only in English, yes.
Yeah. And they're really, really very well written and reflective pieces from a writer about books and things like that. So this is your first semester as a visiting writer. How are you finding it so far?
I am so excited. You're doing your syllabus and everything because you do that this semester.
Oh, you do syllabus?
Yes.
I always tell my students I lost my syllabus and I'll give it to them later and then I never
no,
do.
No, I don't.
Just kidding. I don't really do that.
Yes, I've been teaching at EPCC for the last couple of years. So I know what you have to do your syllabus. But this time it feels different because I get to put in the syllabus what I want them to read because I know they're going to get something out of it and my exercises and everything. So this is like the dream class. I think the four classes I'm teaching are their dream class because I get to do with them what I would like someone to do with me in terms of writing.
Oh, I like that. That's a great guideline, what I would like. Yeah. Well, we're very, very fortunate to have you here.
Thank you. So, I'm very excited.
Not only on the show, but at the university.
I'm super grateful.
We're talking to Professor Silvia Aguilar Seleni. Thank you for joining us on
Thank
Words
you very
on
much. Thank you.
I'm Daniel Chacon, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.